The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
You know those digital screens when you go into a fast food place where you just order, it's just you and the machine. There's a UK fast food chain now that's going to swap those digital screens out, and they're going to bring back what it calls the human touch to some of their stores. And it's a pretty bold move at a time when self-service kiosks have become the norm. They do let us dodge human interaction if that's what you're into, whether we're doing the weekly shop or grabbing a Saturday night takeaway. They're not just convenient, they're cleverly designed to make us spend a bit more. They nudge us towards the extras and the upgrades that we might otherwise skip. Well, to talk about the impact on all of this on consumer behaviour, Lorcan Nyan is here from the Communications Clinic. Hello, Lorcan.
Hello.
So there's lots of theories about what these machines are doing to us and our behaviour. So we might throw in extra biscuits and sweets into the trolley if we think nobody's looking at us at the other end and sort of judging us, silently judging us?
Yeah. The long and the short of it is if you're buying from a machine, if you're buying from a screen, you're likely to buy more and you're likely to buy stuff that is worse for you. So anywhere from the realm of, depending on the study, from a 10% extra to 30 to 40% extra you will spend if you're at a kiosk. So if you take like a fast food chain, if you're at the kiosk, you might be, let's say you're a little bit hungover, you've gone to get a bit of fast food and you said, I'll get the meal, and say, well, do you want 6 chicken nuggets as well? Much more likely to say yes to a machine than you are to a cashier. So the classic, you know, the line of, do you want fries with that? You're more likely to say yes to the machine than you are to the cashier.
Because you don't want to look like a savage if the cashier asks you about the nuggets.
That's part of it.
But the machine doesn't judge.
You're not going to be embarrassed for gorging because the machine doesn't judge.
Do you want some garlic sauce? Oh no, I'd never have garlic sauce. Yes, please, I would if the machine asks me.
This is exactly it. And there's also the machine is better at kind of knowing how to make instinctive decisions as well. So if somebody actually asks you the question, it forces your brain to get, well, do I want, should I not, maybe I shouldn't. Well, if the machine will basically just, it's a little press, you've pressed the button before you've even realised you've pressed the button, and then therefore you're ordering more. But the idea seems to go through retail as well, where again, if you're in retail, okay, you're more likely to buy something and put it in because the total cost, so you're less worried about a cashier judging you.
If I'm doing a self-scan, which I do very often because it's very handy, you're telling me that I'm spending more money.
Most likely you're spending more money. And the reason, look, we all do the self-service more. Number one, because it's handy. And number two, if a shop wants you to do self-service, they're kind of going to get you to do self-service. As I was coming over here, I went into one of the fast food chains and you pass 12 kiosks and then there's one cashier at the front. But you can go past the 12 first. So like your behaviour is driven. We all think we're in control of our own behaviour. We all think we're making logical decisions. There are very, very smart people who are doing very, very subtle things that are driving our behaviour. Right. But you're more likely to be spending
more.
Was
that for research that you went in there, or did you get something?
It was for research today, right? A different morning, a different day, I may have got something, but I said for research today.
Into his pockets.
And nobody there to judge me because I could have done it straight on the machine. But where this is going, Claire, I was at the Winter Olympics for a weekend, and in one of the arenas I went in and they had an AI shop, okay? And you went in, you tapped your card going in. There was not one human inside the shop. There was not one self-scan. There was not one barcode. You went in, you could pick up a couple of beers, you could pick up a burger and walk out, and it just charged your card. There's enough cameras inside there that it could see what you picked up, see what you bought. So never mind just the self-scan where you have to go to somebody to help you out a lot of time anyway, or to verify. There was no need for that. It was all automated.
But didn't Amazon try that a few years ago and then they ditched it? Just didn't work. People didn't like it.
Yeah, they tried and they rolled back. The technology has got better, and I don't think this is going to become kind of ubiquitous absolutely everywhere, because there's always going to be people who seek to differentiate themselves. Like your local coffee shop isn't going to do what a chain coffee shop might do with one of those screens, because their differentiator will be, well, we obviously make better coffee and, you know, we have that local service. But for the big mass consumer pieces, it is going that way. Tesco are looking at trialing that kind of technology, you know, in some of their smaller stores. So that is the direction of travel. And like, you know, we can laugh about it here and, you know, did you buy more, etc. But like in a world where 20% of people say they're lonely, and sorry, that's 20% is in Ireland. We're the loneliest country in Europe. 13% is the EU average. Like, it is another, I suppose, symbol of the fact that we are moving towards kind of a very, very connection-free world. And that it's more convenient, absolutely. But the more convenient thing long-term can make you feel pretty bad.
Well, that's what I'm saying to you, you know, about this economic model of selling things without any human interaction. If the consumers don't like this and don't want it, is it still going to be forced upon us?
Yes, because human beings will make very bad decisions for themselves in various different contexts. We are not built to live in the world that we are living in right now. Our brains, our makeup, we are not built to live in a world as technologically advanced as this. If you were to condense down the timeline of which we've had our bodies and brains, the makeup we have right now, down to 100 years, the Industrial Revolution would have happened at the end of November on the 100th year. You know, so like we were, it's a cliche, but we were hunter-gatherers for a hell of a lot longer than we've been in the world that we're in right now. So we're not actually made for it. And therefore, we're being bombarded by very, very smart people who are moving us a different direction. Look, the analogy or the example I would use is there's loads of times when, you know, let's say you're in a taxi and you could have a conversation with the taxi driver. And instead you say, do you know what? I'll just scroll. You know, I'll scroll through the phone, I won't. But we've also all been in taxi drivers. We've walked on and said, that was a really enjoyable conversation. You know, and you've actually made that little bit of a connection. I could be phoning in here instead. I came in, I've had four or five great conversations on the way in. Because when you're out in the world, you don't even know, but you end up making connection. It makes you feel better. But the easier thing to do is scroll on the phone. The easier thing to do is to go to the kiosk. The easier thing to do is to go to self-service. But you do the easy thing 50 times and then you haven't talked to somebody.
Yeah, because I mean, if you decide, oh, I want to go to the checkout that is staffed by somebody, that is going to take you longer. There is no question about it. So you have to be able to budget an extra, it could be 20 minutes by the time you queue up.
Yeah. But it's going to take you longer, obviously, because they're no longer staffed to the same degree that they
used to
be. There's
that. But also, if you're wandering around with the little scanning gone yourself, you have it all done by the time you get to the till, and all you have to do is pay.
And I suppose, and then within that as well, I suppose this is where it gets to a next level. If you're walking around with the scanning gun, for the most part, you have to have signed in with your card, which means that the shop is now getting data about you as you go about shopping. So they now know your consumer behavior, and they're trialing putting ads into the self-scanner so that as they're geolocated, as you get closer to the chocolate aisle, if they know that you like a particular packet of biscuits that you used to buy a month ago, you haven't bought it since, you might get a little ad for a special offer on that particular brand. So, you know, like
that. Does that bother you, though? I'm prepared to trade. I'm prepared to trade that information for convenience and speed, because what I don't like doing is spending too long in any supermarket.
Yeah. And I don't think supermarkets are going to solve the loneliness epidemic, you know, no matter how personalized you make them. But I suppose it is just symbolic of an idea that we are getting less connected. And it might not bother you today, but there are, like, and particularly younger people, actually, the younger you are, the more likely you are to suffer from extreme loneliness in this country, Europe, and wider afield. Like, the example that always jumps out at me is, like, you now have on the delivery apps for takeaways, you have the option now to say, leave it at the door. So people have got to the point where just like, whatever about going out for a meal, I don't even want to say hi to delivery driver. Yeah, just
don't
leave
talk
it.
To me. Don't look at me. Yeah, don't ring my doorbell.
There are days when that's what you need. There's days when that's what you want. But, you know, if your defenses are lower, if you're already, let's say, you know, lonely, if you're already depressed, if you're already socially anxious, you're actually less likely to then want to engage with people. And like, it is possible now to be a fully productive economic member of society, that you're still paying taxes and, you know, government are happy with the tax take that is coming from you as an individual. And you can be living your life normally and not interact with a human. That, you know, so that the idea of kind of social isolation used to be, well, look, you're housebound or you might be agoraphobic. You might be in a situation where you've lost contact with people. You can still be a fully productive member of society now and never have to interact with another human, which for some people is fine. But in the round, I don't think that's a good direction of travel. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. Profit will drive it. There's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah. So I think what you're saying is we can make choices and we can live from one end of the day to the other without talking to anybody. But we have got to find a way to make social connections, because the people who are deciding we shouldn't are not acting in our best interests.
They're not. They're acting in their interest of their shareholders, which is what they have a duty to do. And that's absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. But this idea that profit should be the only driver. And yes, there's an element of individual responsibility for this. There's an element of you need to be responsible for your own level of connection, your own human connection. But there are a lot of forces driving us in the other direction. You know, like this idea that every individual has the willpower, has the focus, has the mental strength and energy at every single time to always make the best decision for themselves, when particularly because of technology, they are being bombarded down to go the easier route and then the less connected route. I think it's a little bit of a fallacy to think that people will be have the power to always make that decision for themselves. And so there is a degree where kind of societally we need to look at things and say, hang on, are we actually moving everything in the right direction? Mm-hmm. Are we actually facilitating? Like, to go to the example of when you look at anybody talking about sport now, the way to get more funding, lots of people are talking about this, is you have to have an economic impact report for your sport. Here's how many jobs you're creating. Here's the impact we're having economically. And like, that's not what sport is
not
about.
Not what it's about. Yeah, you're right.
And yet that's what drives decision making as well. If it leads to X number of jobs, well, then therefore we should get the funding. We should get more money. And I'm like, great, but that's not the only thing that matters. Like, and if you look at social connection, if you look at isolation, I mean, sport is a massive conduit to fixing that, as is art, as is drama, etc. But we don't look at it that way.
Valuing the wrong things, Lorcan. That's the conclusion we come to. Thank you so much. Don't buy the chicken nuggets on the way back to the office from that machine.
I can't go twice.
You can't go twice.
Yeah, I start wondering why this fella keeps coming in and out at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Lorcan Nine from the Communications Clinic.
The Clare Byrne Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.